quite a lot of effort, and the next year after I qualified, and the qualification was really on the side of the unallocated fund that we've had. We had gone through above the threshold at the time, a materiality threshold that the AG places. And I think at the time there was 1.5 million, so we were above that. We tried everything to control the amount so that they are lower. But we've said that it's something that is inherent in the business that we are, because there are people depositing money all the time. So some of them don't even put appropriate references to those. But there's a lot that we've done since then to try to control that by putting controls, including talking to the banks. So we've turned around that situation. But if you look at the going concern issues, it's matters that have been there since then. I think the chair of the audit committee will also give the context, because you'll recall that we took over the organization from a point of view where we had very serious financial problems. Of course, those are the issues that raised the issues of going concern going forward, but we have since resolved it. In the current year, the issue of going concern was resolved completely, although it took us quite a lot of time to resolve it. Material losses, of course, we've posted material losses due to also the financial position for many years. And material impairments in the first year, yes, we didn't have a lot. And as in when we were getting quite a lot of funds coming in, and also, Chairperson, I was debating with my CFO that, look, my experience as well is that given the fact that we've had quite some few changes in the financial leadership as well, the way you view how to treat your impairments or your provisions of debt and so on differs from CFO to CFO. And sometimes that affects issues of reinstatements as well. And others would say, look, we believe that the provision for debt, this is how we need to deal with it. Others would say, no, we shouldn't have written off, let's reinstate. And then that's where we ended up. But I think with maturity, we are at a stage where we are maturing in terms of that. If you look at issues of predetermined objectives, historically as well, we have tried quite a lot. As in when we were refining it, somewhere it looks like we were slided back. But Chairperson, I think there's a lot of improvement over the years, considering that we started where we didn't even have capacity to deal with the issues of the PFMA and so on. As you can recall, we were only scheduled in 2008, and going forward, there's been building capacity towards that. Issues of irregular expenditure, I think the three previous years or so has been matters that we've been accumulating, and precisely because at the time, I think the accounting authority at the time didn't know exactly how to deal with it, but which was a general problem amongst entities and so on, how to actually write off the matters and account to them. But we have since resolved that problem, I think, with assistance of Treasury. I think with the new framework of dealing with irregular expenditure, we've done so. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, with us, Chairperson, I think, as you can see, we've posted fruitless quite over the years. But if you go back and look at what was the amount of fruitless in terms of amount, there has been significant improvement. I think we've improved almost 99% of it, because the amounts currently is very minimal amounts, which are caused really by very, very, what would say, teething problems in terms of putting controls, where some of our staff are not doing it what they're supposed to be doing. For instance, to give an example, if you are supposed to be paying SARS, money over to SARS on the seventh day, and then you miss one day, SARS would impose, penalties. And the penalty, due to the amount that you're supposed to have paid, the penalty becomes quite very a significant amount. At times it goes to about 100,000, depending on what you were supposed to pay. So we are implementing what we call consequence management for each and every aspect. We will talk to you later about it, what we have done in that space, Chairperson. I think also, if one zooms into the key achievements, I always take this opportunity to talk about key achievements, especially where we start off on a negative footing, Chairperson. In the years, as I've said already, we have improved the going concern, and currently it looks like we are completely eradicating it. And if one zooms into what we are planning in the future years to come, one would certainly say that perhaps we will be far away from going back into that position. Issues of unknown and unallocated deposits, we are going to finally eradicate them at one point or another, because if we're going to implement the new ERP, the new payment system that we seek to implement, we will completely eradicate it, because part of the problem is that we are only dealing with one bank and dealing with a client base with various banks. So if we implement all the controls, the same controls across the board, we shouldn't have issues of unallocated deposits and so on. So those controls are in place. Irregular expenditure, I think we've eliminated that through the controls that we put. We're making sure that all the tick boxes are done, all the controls are in place, all the reconciliations are in place, and we're able to avoid irregular expenditure with all costs. I think part of what we have achieved, Chairperson, in the 4 years is to finalize the matter that we've had with our major stakeholder, which is SIA. You would recall that we were back in court with them for almost 4 years. That matter has been finalized. We're happy to say even the amount that the court did not say we should pay, we have paid back to the industry. The industry is quite happy where they are. We've had to refund them 80 million, and we have had to recover almost in the same year from paying them 80 million, which was actually supposed to have done in 3 years. So that tells you the relationship we have with the industry currently. That is quite a very sound relationship. The review of annual fees, you would recall, Chairperson, that the previous 5 years, why we landed ourselves in such a very serious financial problems, that the previous accounting authorities and management for 9 years did not raise the fees. And remember that the organization depends solely on the fees because it's not funded through a vote of parliament. So we have made sure that consistently every year we are raising the fees as we're supposed to raise the fees, in consultation, of course, with the industry and in agreement with them. So we do not foresee any issues with regard to legal. We are trying to address even those that are not satisfied, because you'll find there will always be a portion of the industry that's not satisfied with the fees. I've said to the industry that going into the future, the whole idea is for us to get rid of the fees. If we find a very sound model to finance the authority, then we shouldn't be paying fees. Of course, we should be taking from there. Chairperson, I think moving forward, also it is worthwhile mentioning that we have achieved almost 94% of our planned objectives, and that translates to the service delivery that we've done. If you go back the years, you will understand that given the controls issues that we've had, that had given a problem with regard to the achievement of predetermined objectives. We have reviewed the code of conduct, and this is, I think, one key aspect that even amid all these governance issues that we've had in the years, we have kept our mandate to ensure that we effectively regulate the private security industry. Therefore, that speaks to that as well. I think going forward, Chairperson, on the key management, the key controls implemented, we have put in place a risk management system, which I think is sound at the moment. We are maturing into that. Coupled with that, we have also a combined assurance model that we've put in place, and that really says that the first line of defense in terms of putting key controls, it is management. Management followed by internal audit, of course also followed by the audit committee, and then we have also the accounting authority making sure that all these things are done. The audits are done in terms of the risk-based audit plan. In other words, we zoom in terms of our risk analysis and say this is where the likelihood of the problems are to occur, and then therefore the audit plan has to be based on the risks that we've identified. So I think we've also made sure that we've debated quite a lot in terms of how do we avoid also duplications between what the internal auditors are doing and what the external auditors are doing. They should be in sync in terms of that. I think the audit committee will speak quite in depth in regard to that. Issues of consequence management, Chairperson, I think this is one aspect to control key controls that we've put in place, because there's no use for us to put key controls when we know that our staff will not be adhering to that. So what we do is, to give an example, with the regular expenditure or fruitless expenditure, we ensure that all of those that okay are then given to our internal investigators to investigate whether there is anyone to blame, and if there is anyone to blame, then we take consequence management, be it warnings, be it deductions of amounts, For instance, in the case where we're paying interest, when we're supposed not to have paid interest, we will deduct those amounts from the salaries of employees. Of course, there should be a due process that follows before we do that in terms of the labor relations legislation. Performance management, Chairperson, this is one key aspect. What we've done, we've gone a step further. In terms of audit findings, we've made sure that we link this to performance management. In other words, all the managers, one of the responsibilities that they have is to ensure that they are actually actioning all the audit findings and correcting all the audit findings that are there. And we are monitoring this in terms of our performance management committee as well as the other committee that we've set up. I think the CFO will tell us a little bit more about the operation towards clean audit. We've even compiled a chart of what the deliverables are and how do we talk to them. Mainly it's also about talking to document management system that we have. In other words, when there's an audit finding, what we require from a manager responsible for that is to come to us and say, I have implemented the corrective measures, and this is the evidence that to show that I've implemented. So there should be a portfolio of evidence, and that is interrogated to ensure that indeed what is in paper is what has been done and has been achieved. So I think we are almost okay with that. Of course, Chairperson, with the establishment of the key oversight structures that we have in place, the council is there. We have, and now I think the council have established a finance and investment committee, which will still to have its first sitting. The audit and risk committee has always been there. The internal audit is there. Risk management committee is there, which is also an operational committee which looks deeper into what are the risks from the risk point of view. How do we tolerate? How do we deal with them? Operational clean audit, that's the committee that is a new committee that we've established, which looks beyond the performance achievement but deeper into whether we have dealt with adequately with the audit findings. I think going a little bit into the audit report, Chairperson, without, I think I'll hand over very shortly to the CFO. Matters that were affecting audit, Chairperson, misstatements of financial statements, I think the CFO will also deal with it. The matters that we've corrected, I have just in brief given an example. I think it's proper to zoom in into what has caused these misstatements in this current year. The correction of prior years, if you look at the suspended and the previously withdrawn service providers, what had happened is that we are supposed to withdraw some of the service providers that are not paying, right? So I think erroneously what we've done is we've also dealt with those that were suspended, because those that were suspended are not gone forever. We'll have to come back. So those are the things that have been corrected. And also understatement of the commitment on and disclosure of the IT, I think there's been a lot of discussion with regard to the AG, how is that going to be interpreted going forward, and that has been corrected as well. The restatement of correcting corresponding figures, Chairperson, these are the debtors, and I think it's also an issue of saying you have withdrawn, you have decided to write off these debtors, right? And in the next year when you do your financials, realize no, we shouldn't have actually done this. Let's go back and reinstate those that we've withdrawn. And also, I think it's the same thing that happened with regard to those that were withdrawn and suspended. We've had to go and restate them. The employee costs, I think the issue there was that we have classified, remember that we pay our audit committee members as well as other committees through the payroll. So erroneously, those were classified as employee costs. So we've had to reinstate them. So we put in control, corrective measures to ensure that doesn't happen. And that is going to be through the reconciliation of what sits in the payroll and what sits in the system that we use for financial statements. Significant uncertainties, Chairperson, is something that you can't really run away from. that will always be there. We have disclosed, if you go to page 147 of the annual report, you will see what it is. Significant is that the AG is saying, look, and we're saying as well, we are involved in certain legal matters which poses significant uncertainties in terms of the outcome thereof, because at any point you almost can't say whether you're going to win or not. It all rests in the court. So the amounts thereof and the uncertainties have to be in any way disclosed. Now, the demolition of costs, I think, is one matter. Demolition costs of Arcadia Building. I think Arcadia Building will always be there for as long as the building is still standing, shall we say. We've had to disclose also that we are likely to incur a demolition cost going into future, but as in when we are not demolishing that building, is the land value is appreciating all the time, and therefore we'll almost write off those costs that we have put in place there. I think in terms of predetermined objectives, Jefferson, we've done quite very well historically. Going back, you'll notice that we have improved, except that in program 3 we were qualified on reliability. And I can just give an example what led to this qualification, Jefferson. It is actually one KPI that resulted in this amongst, I think, 14 KPIs that we've had. You find a situation where you have a call center. When calls come in, you need to record when a call came in and when the matter was resolved. Now, if there is a lot of them coming in at the same time, it almost becomes impossible for operators to record in each and every one of them at the same time. So what they've done is they barked all of them and said, we've received this on this day. For instance, if they were not able to record all of them in one day, they would then record them the next day. Then when you go to the evidence as to when actually the call came in, what was recorded, then there's a discrepancy. So that is what the AG would fought back and forth and said, okay, we will have to improve the system that we have so that one way or the other we are able to account for how the matter came in, the complaint came in, and when it was resolved exactly in one system, so that we are able to talk to each other. Because at times it's very difficult to go back and point out exactly when the call system, the call came. So that was exactly the issue that we had with respect to this specific one. So that resulted in this whole program, that whole KPI being qualified on that basis. Chairperson, I think some of the additional findings that were there is a lack of efficient and transparent systems in financial management. If you go back, you will notice that that talks to the issue of misstatements in financial statements. I think that's the same thing that the AG, these are generic findings that the AG would always put. Financial statements not compliant with the prescribed financial reporting, that is GRAP. So obviously if you haven't disclosed or these restatements or these corrective issues that you need to undertake, that will always be. The issues of fruitless, we've spoken about them, consequence management not implemented. You would recall with our last sitting on the annual report, we have stated what was the issue with the consequence management. And we've debated that quite a lot with the AG, but the whole issue that came out is that, look, we are prepared to take consequence management, but we find ourselves in a difficult position where we've had to discipline someone who's no longer there. And we couldn't have done it. We'd actually shown them a draft charge sheet that person was given before that person resigned. So there was no way we could have dealt with that. But as I said, we've even enhanced the matter so that we don't have to wait each time for the end of the financial year for us to take consequence management. What we've done is, at any point that it occurs, we then give it to an investigator to deal with. And so we can decide whether there's consequence management to apply or not. In terms of internal controls that were not fully implemented, I've said already, Chairperson, there's quite a lot. We implemented the operation towards clean audit, inadequate oversight role regarding financial performance, statement and performance. I think also the CFO will emphasize on what are the controls that we've put there, and the proper controls not implemented daily management. I think that as well is part of what we've done towards making sure that we have clean audits. Chairperson, at this point, I think I will hand over to to the CFO to carry on with the presentation. And then talk to the action plan itself.
Thank you, Mr. Chowki. Yes, Shiva.
Thank you and good morning. I'll start on slide number 11. The slide indicates we have received 58 audit findings. The slide indicates where the most of the findings emanate from. If you look at the orange, it says mostly are financial issues, which is mainly the cause of the audit, the auditing financial statement. And then the next slides, we indicate what we have done so far. We have resolved 41. We are finalizing, we are busy addressing the 17 that's still outstanding. And in the next slide, we indicated who's responsible for the implementation of the action plan. The first few finding, the person responsible is the Deputy Director of Finance and Administration, the CFO. And then here we indicated the action plan. If you recall, the director indicated in the previous slide the lack of implementation, the reinstatement, and all those things. We summarize them and we realize the root causes are mainly we need to refresh, take the key preparers of the financial statement to a refresher because they are fully aware of the necessary requirement of GRAP compliance. And then we also suggested that if we have a project plan, and then the project plan to ensure that there's adequate time for oversight, all those committees that we indicated in our first slide to be able to quality check and present audit evidence so that we are able to move towards a clean audit. And then the project plan is implemented currently in our quarterly finances to test whether it's fully effective. If you look at the target date, we have met that, and then the preparers will go in November so that when we prepare the next quarter, we can test whether they've adapted and we are fully compliant with the GRAP and all the necessary financial things. And then the monthly and quarterly and yearly checklist, it's one of the things that they realize that the internal controls are lacking. So if we prepare the monthly and quarterly, inculcate the norm, you see, when we go to commitments is a monthly thing. So we preparing on monthly basis, the CFO, the EXCO monthly report, it has commitment, it has accrual, all those necessary documents that needs to be available during the financial year. Now we have put them in the monthly financial report, and we have checklists to check whether all the compliance issues in terms of the GRAP and the National Treasury guidelines are complied with. And then we also deployed the dashboard, that the model by the AG and a key control to check whether are we moving towards, because for us to be able to achieve clean audit, we should comply with those the capability models, our internal controls. We check ourselves to improve ourselves on quarterly basis, and then we also submit it to EXCO so that we are able, even our internal audit sometimes they check it whether are we improving, or because we're not only focusing on the internal audit, we're moving towards a clean audit. So, and also we also deployed the financial, we assess our financial capability model from National Treasury so that we are able to check our dashboard. And then we also have the exception report where we check whether the things that we are planning, like for a recon, we now analyze the exception and then come up with an action plan to ensure that the exception are addressed and monitored regularly. Yeah. And then one of the things that we realize that it's critical for us, if you look at the material amendment, it's IT contract. So one of the things that we said we must do, we monitor our contract register on monthly basis, and also we develop a policy register because we had some issues in relating to policy and governance issues. So instead of just addressing one policy, we said, okay, let's look at the holistic approach and find out which policies and review our, also our policies, so that also our oversight committees, council and audit committees, they are fully aware of which policies that are due to be reviewed and they can play an oversight role, and management know what is expected from them. And also one of the things is commitment register, deviation register that we do on monthly, and fruitless and wasteful register and irregular register. So that we are, it's one of the things, key things for us to be able to prepare accurate and financial information. Also this, we implemented to improve our internal controls, the debtors records. We have a deficiency noted where the CIRA 21 records are not reconciling, the understatement and overstatement, creditors recon, where you also monitor what you're paying, and also the allocation of your things, where you don't have restatement of figures. Asset recons, we have issues under assets where assets are on the floor, not in the asset, not in the trial balance. So we implemented asset recons to ensure and check, and then also the quarterly verification. And then after the quarterly, we have the asset recon, and then the asset reports to ensure that all the necessary correspondence and accession address. The leave recons to address the payroll deficiencies. We had one or two. Statements. For an example, the audit committee will be, if we had that, we'll be able to detect it earlier and have it addressed. And then also the suspense account should be cleared. It's a norm that suspense account. So we monitoring all this on monthly basis. And then under accounts receivable, we flagged it out this one so that we should anticipate, because we had an issue about recons in terms of the CIRA 21. So we're saying that we have deployed an SMS to remind our service provider to submit so that we are able to comply with the legislation. And then we said no letter of good standing will be issued without the CIRA 21. And then when during the inspection, our inspectors asked for it so that we can improve the, you know, again, it would be quantity, because sometimes they will say key suppliers. So you look at the amount and then you reconcile them. And also the CIRA bank account, where the unallocated that we spoke about in the last portfolio committee. So we address it with the bank that they must configure our banks to mandate a ID or CIRA number or something that we will be able to detect so that we can clear our suspense account. And then on under asset management, we have developed a framework. We looked at the requirements of asset management in terms of the graph, and then we developed a framework monitored. This is a critical area that we thought we should focus on because we've got regional offices and other offices outside. And then under tender SCM, we developed a Section 32 tender compliance checklist, and then we also have a pagination. We paginate our files so that they're correctly numbered and then they're filled for audit. And then under IT, we have only three findings. However, we still take them very serious. We had IT governance register to be developed. It also formed part of the other policy register. It will be there. The query, the next query that they raise, it's where who reviews the, it's our internal control issues, where who reviews the when you give powers, like you assigned a responsibility, somebody must review. So the DDFA, the CFO is now reviewing whether the person that is still like authorizing, approving, is this still in order. So every three quarter, we sit IT governance committee, we review, and the CFO present to the IT government. And then the policy that they raise is problem management policy. But we said this policy is developed, it's going to be approved in the next financial year. However, when we attend forums, IT governance forums, we learn about new things, and then there's a need for a policy. So that's why we have an IT governance register, where we are fully aware of other policies. We're not waiting for the AG to tell us that there's a need for this policy, there's a need here. And then we now go to the predetermined objectives. As the director indicated earlier, that we had a material finding, and then there's a qualified audit opinion. We, with only one KPI, we moved from, we missing one, the R, the reliability, and then the responsible person for communication is Deputy Director Communication and Registration. And then the issues there, it's the calculation. The director spoke about it. We have implemented a method of calculation to ensure that all the necessary, and then we have a process map where it covers everybody, and everybody is fully aware what's supposed to be done and what, because it's a holistic approach. What they do, it ends up in finance, and we deal with it. All those, that's what we have done. And then also on regular basis, we do quality review of this in the head office. And then I spoke about also this one, the communication. We have a clearly defined process and procedures of handling complaints, because this is a paper management. We also have a document management that the director also spoke about, that we really need to have our document management on time. And what we have also done as OPCA and also as executive, we have document management tools that we upload on monthly basis, cascade to a quarterly basis, and then we review the portfolio of evidence so that we are able to produce quality information, and without also wasting time for the AG or even the internal audit where they come. And then the next one for law enforcement, we had only three findings, which is administrative, they're not material, but we said to avoid them from being significant and material, let's flag them out. And then we had issues of where firearm inspection were not signed, and then we have now procedures, and we worked with the Deputy Director Law Enforcement Workshop with team to ensure that all those things are monitored. And going back, by the way, when the AG comes, it ends in August, and then there will be things that are done, what happened in April, that's those 3 months. Then we went back and audit ourselves and ensure that all the things that we have proposed, they are implemented. So we have looked at the whole population and then fixed them in terms of the new proposal. And then the next one also, it was for the case that where we register a case at SATS, they give us a small piece or they give us a SMS. Now when our inspectors go to the police station, they go with a form, they stamp our form, they come with it, then it's our proof to the AG. And those are our management commitments towards that. And in terms of the accounting authority commitment, they are committing that they will exercise oversight responsibility as their role and ensure human resources is available to implement and implement appropriate policies, and because their role is also on policies and procedures, they are there to approve the policies and assist us in implementing and monitoring also whether we are doing, approve and monitor the implementation of action plan, which is one of the things every council meeting, every audit committee meeting, we present our audit, we present our action plan, and then they monitor the status to date. Yeah. And then in terms of the financial and performance management, they will ensure proper record keeping of all transactions, which is management has complied. They have a document management system, maintain effective control towards daily and monthly processing and reconciling of journal. If you see all those records that we're proposing and we're monitoring, we're moving towards this. Produce regular and accurate complete financial information. If you look at the project plan that we have implemented, it indicates that we're allowing them as management to create the second line of defense and the third line of defense. And all the things from the third line of defense, which is the AG, we are also, and even the portfolio committee, we are also implementing and reporting back as a third line of defense. And then on governance issues that ensure that risk are periodically identified and assessed. We have a proper risk management, and our internal audit is risk-based. Maintain an adequate resource and functioning of internal audit. We have appointed, outsourced the internal audit, and we have been audited. And our audit is mainly, most of the time, it's risk-based. And then what the AG has raised, we ask them to review. Even the action plan, they review it and tell us if the proposed action plan, that they really address the resources. And then we also have an audit committee, and they perform the oversight role. Thank you.
Presentation. Yeah. And of course, the summary of the audit findings in this document as well.
Yeah,
I think maybe it's an excellent document. And I think your presentation, if I compare the four institutions in terms of the financial management, top of the class. Well done, Sira.
Yeah.
It's detailed, it's to the point, and I that's a very good, I think, case study for the other three departments, how to do things. So well done. Yeah, let's go to the questions. My two first questions is to the chairperson of the audit committee. I just want to get a sense of the review of the financial statements before it is made available, the final version to the AG. What is the engagement at audit committee level? We raised the same issue with the other departments because if there is material mistakes, is the audit committee able to pick it up or send it back? I know there was a problem with the previous CFO, and I think there's now appropriate capacity there, but I mean, I just want to get a sense of that. Then furthermore, a lot of the issues, if internal audit order those projects or specific areas, they can pick it up. Now, CIRA is still having an external firm doing that internal audit function. I just want to get this, a view from your side. If it was, for example, internal audit function within the department without restrictions of budget and deciding on projects with the leadership of the audit committee, would they have been able to pick up some of these issues? I just want to get your view on that. Let's go to the other members. Honorable Molobatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Sarah's report is very, very good. I remember there was a time we had many, many problems. Mr. Chauke knows. There was a time we wouldn't even eat lunch with us. And for me, it was sad because he's my own boy. Okay, just on a lighter note, Chair. My first question is how you spoke of an amount that you paid that the court did not say you should pay. Is there a particular reason for this? And the CFO, I heard you say you audit yourself. How is this done? And my third, how many chairs? Three. Firing. Yeah. My third one, how do you determine the audit fee of the AGSSA? My next one, can the audit committee explain the method it uses to conduct follow-ups? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join you Honorable Molewas, to congratulate this department. Also, let me first apologize for coming late. It is because of the transport. Yeah, I've got one question, Chairperson. It deals with the whether it's slide 9 or page 9. About the consequence management not implemented. My question is, for instance, if a member resigned at a time when he or she was about to appear or about to face consequences and escaped with a murder. and that member get employment, it's either from other department in government or private sector. What happened to that member? What do you do? You make follow up with the new employer and so on. I just want to get that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In slide 15 in your action plan, you said registered are monitored to enhance quality of AFS. When and how? And will you please provide clarity in which the monitoring of registered will be able to enhance the quality of AFS, especially in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure? My second question, will you please explain the procedure that will be followed by the asset management team and how this will contribute to the improvement of asset management and control? In slide 15 again, you speak of monitoring of reconciliations. Monitoring of reconciliation has been a particular challenge. Will you please provide clarity on the manner in which the reconciliation of debtors be conducted? Number four, what is the name of the institution that will present the GREP refresher course and the number of personnel that will attend the refresher training? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mula, Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chairperson, and apologies for my late arrival earlier this morning. Just two questions, and good morning to the delegation. First question, I heard Mr. Chauke mention that the authority was looking at possible options for alternative funding sources in future, and moving away from the fee-based revenue model. I was just curious to get a sense of what are those alternatives that have been felt out, or sort of what the leads are. And then just to springboard from the chairperson's question on the outsourcing of the internal audit function. Firstly, just to check with the audit committee itself if they are satisfied with the quality of their work. Is it up to standard what you would expect, given that it's operating in that way? And then secondly, I don't have a problem in principle with the outsourcing of that function. There are sometimes situations that call for it. But the one thing I would like to see if that happens is that it's linked to an ongoing capacity building within the department. So the idea is for the outsourced agents to phase themselves out over the medium to long term, so that capacity can exist in the department. Is that part of the approach and the agreement with the BIG group? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Maybe just one question from my side to the director. I think we welcome this clean audit committee or board committee. I just want to know, when was it established and who's its members and how does it operate? Thank you. First round of questions, over to the chairperson of the audit committee and the rest of the delegation.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much, Chair, for the questions. But before I respond to the questions, let me go back to the earlier comment where in some cases it is alleged that AG thinks that sometimes the audit committee defends management. I'd like to talk about our committee. That perception or rather that allegation, for us, it does not apply at all. In our committee, we disagree with management when we need to disagree. We take our view. We do what we think is right as a committee. Nowhere do we get compromised. And not only that, because we disagree on issues and so forth, there are a lot of issues outside what we have, we also report to the council. And when there's disagreement, we tell the councils what we recommend and we state we disagree. And if the action is required, we recommend the action to the council that we say, we're not happy with it, please take action against the management for this. So that's what we do. Now, obviously, auditors are there, they attend all the meetings. However, the disagreements it's not only limited to management. The disagreement is with everyone, whoever we believe is not right. And that includes the auditors, that includes AG. So, of course, with the AG, they're human as well. Sometimes the matter is misstated one way or the other, and we voice our disagreements when is that the case, and we only accept the right things. So I've just given the background to that. The first question about the review of the AFS, taking into account that AG says there were material adjustments on the financials. Yes, that's true. There were adjustments, and one would then say, hey, audit committee, if you were there, how does that happen? We do review AFS. We review. We do a very thorough job. However, our review is limited to this document. If one can agree that this is AFS. Now, you can do the review on this, but this is not the beginning and the end of everything. In getting into these figures, there are files and ledgers and ledgers there. The audit committee, because of the time constraints, because obviously the audit committee, you can only have a 4-hour or whatever meeting. So you then, in terms of what happens there on the supporting documents, you may never know. Let's take an example. There will be revenue that's misstated that relates to last year's, but it was incorporated this year. So the review is not going to tell you that. Only if somebody goes and audits the documents and saying, based on the supporting documents, this belongs to this year and that year. And then you, as the auditors, because the auditors do that, they'll then come back and say, okay, this was incorrectly disclosed and so forth, and as a result of that, the financials are disclosed. But that does not mean that the review was not adequate, but maybe it's because there was no audit before the audit. So now, if one has to deal, that's probably the issue that we do need, because obviously the management, one understands because they're under pressure and so forth. There's possibility that they could omit one or two things. The thing that we would discuss with the management, we will have to get some kind of an independent review, because that independent review will then be able to go into the detailed supporting documents that will give us, as the audit committee, assurance that the financials, not that they are fairly disclosed, but there's proper link with the financial, with the supporting documents, then that will eliminate those subsequent misstatements. To internal audit, the issue was, first of all, the internal audit not identifying some of the problems and internal audit versus outsourcing. Let's start with not identifying the problems. They are, of course, risk-based. Now, if they're risk-based, that means you're not doing everything. You're prioritizing things according to the risk. Now, of course, one can debate and saying, is that the right thing? What you identify as top risk, is it real top risk? Okay, that's a different question. But there are risk-based, and of course, being risk-based is a question of saying, what are the priorities? Now, if you look at Syria, the last couple of years, what has been the bigger questions? The revenue and the debtors, the going concern and so forth and so forth. So if you're looking and sitting in the audit committee, you make sure that those areas are addressed and so forth, it goes there. And then, of course, that because you prioritize according to that, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what AG is going to look at, because AG has got his own risk assessment, slightly different, but of course, his AG is not limited to the risk. He just wants to make sure that there's fairness in the financial statement. So there will be areas for sure that will be picked up by AG that was never picked up by the internal auditors and so forth. And of course, in the preparations of the financial statements there, because of the time constraints, we never use the internal auditors to review the AFS before submissions. It's something that we're going to consider going forward. So yes, that's the situations why some of the things are not picked up. Let's look at the internal versus external auditors. Yes, it's true that the outsource, it can be tricky sometimes in the sense that it's restricted with the budget, it's restricted in terms of the plan, and of course it's not there, and sometimes is not user-friendly for management because, hey, there is a contract. The contract says you X amount. Now, you exit the contract, you then end up creating irregular expenditure and so forth. So that is one need to be honest, that there is it does hinder the process. However, one doesn't need to forget, because one has seen both the situations not working. The other situation, or rather the better part of this is this thing, is because you do require specialists within the internal auditors. You need the ICT guys who can be able to do. You need the guys who are skilled in performance information as well as financials, and just a little bit. Now, if you go in-house, that's where you tend to fall short, because now, with Syria is not that big. If you have to appoint an ICT auditor, it's not going to be fully utilized. The others may not be fully utilized. Even if you do, what happens? They get bought, and then when they get bought, then they leave. Then you have a gap while you're trying to fill and so forth. So when you have in a house, the problem is when you don't, you've got a full gap, maybe one will say you outsource some of the things. But you have to have a core staff that's going to be here, because you have a risk of having no internal audit function, should be some resignation. So one, I'll say, needs to balance those two. But I do agree that sometimes, yes, the outsource does get compromised function, because you've got those constraints. The budget constraint and so forth, and the flexibility. So one does need to deal with that. But however, to answer the questions that was asked on the quality of the internal audit work, one has to be careful in answering that. What we see is probably the minor things. The issue around the qualifications, the issue around is we use the internal auditors to follow up on those things, to follow up on these AG findings. So as the audit committee, we place reliance on them. They do a lot of other work that probably at this level it looks like it's fine, but from where them they give us assurance and so forth. So from where I am, I'm happy. We as the audit committee, we're happy with the report that they've given us. They've given assurance on a lot of things in ICT and so forth. So one cannot just say, because of the financial problems or these problems, that probably didn't do their work. One would say, if maybe we need to cover it, because obviously that's what you try to balance changes our whole thing is to increase their scope and say, hey, hang on, we're not going to prioritize and so forth. So the constraint is probably prioritizations and maybe the fact that they are external, but with regard to the quality, we've got no reason to believe that there's a problem. With regard to ongoing capacity, I suppose at this stage, as an entity, together with the accounting authority and the management, there is no strategic decision that has been taken to say, in the longer run, we want to have an in-house or we continue this way. I think one can only answer that question once we had a discussion to see or do some kind of analysis and saying, as Sierra now, which way do we think is better? Okay. One is not saying this way outsourcing is better than that, but it's just to analyze the pros and cons of both. The last question was method of following up the audits. I assume this is referred to the AG findings. With regard to the AG findings, how we do, after every year, the management presents the AG findings as presented but in detail to us. And for each and every finding, they give us an action plan with the timelines as to what they're going to do to fix them. We then question, we say if we're happy, we're happy. But once we're happy, then we then allow the management to go on with the implementations. Every quarter, they tell us the progress that they've made with regard to those and where the discrepancies they explain and then the corrective actions are taken. Over and above that, when the internal auditors audit, are requested to do a follow-up audit on all these. When management says, hey, we've implemented this, we then ask the internal auditors go and check and tell us whether it's implemented for real. So that's the process that happens until the end of the year. If we look at the last year, the year before, that process happens. Out of 58 findings, 57 were implemented, confirmed by the internal auditors. The one that was not implemented was around the vacancies, and obviously the vacancies were affected by the going resource issues, liquidity of the entity, and as an audit committee, we understood that could not be implemented fully because of the resource constraint. I attempted to answer the question.
Thank you very much. Other questions?
Thank you. Chairperson, I think there's one last question perhaps that the chairperson of the audit committee can answer much more comprehensively. How do we determine AG audit fees? I think there was a question like that from the Honorable Mlebatsi. How are AG audit fees determined?
Thank you, Chair, if I can take it. Thank you, Director. What happens every year, AG prepares what they call audit strategy and a plan. In that plan, they have their own risk assessments based on what they're with. They come with to the audit committee with a strategy together with a plan, and that plan is costed accordingly. They have rates per hour and the hours. They then justify what they're going to do and what they need to do. As audit committee, we go over that. Now, obviously, the rate is approved because there's a structure that deals with it. It determines it. We then look at the contents of what the activities they're going to do, taking into account the level of controls we have, taking into account the internal auditors, taking into account the findings that were there. Now, as the audit committee, we then engage with the AG. So based on what they presented, we're happy. If we're happy, we then recommend the fees for approval. If we're not happy, they go back, either convince us or adjust it. Then we'll be happy that there is value for money in terms of what needs to be done, which we're happy that it needs to be done, and what they're saying. we then recommend the fees. And of course, take into account the inflation, taking into account that there has to be value for money for everyone. So we then approve it on that basis, only if we are happy. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there was a question. Perhaps let me start with the very last question, the Chair. When did we start the OPCA, or the Operation Clean Audit? Chairperson, the Operation Clean Audit was implemented in the second quarter of this year. So it's not something that had happened last year. Had it happened, I think we would have been very far. And the question that followed from the chairperson was, who are the members of that committee, and what possibly is the role of that committee? I will not speak in depth about the objectives of the committee, because I think we've dealt with it during the presentation. But the members of the committee, and this again I must emphasize, it's a subcommittee of EXCO. In other words, it is derived from the mandate of EXCO. The members are the senior manager human capital, senior manager business information systems, manager risk, manager supply chain, financial manager, management accountant, manager law enforcement, customer relations manager, manager training, and manager learning and development, and all other managers that are not covered here. In other words, we're saying every business unit has to be represented in that structure. I think it's also befitting to also talk a little bit about what their duties are, which I think goes to the core of what we're trying to achieve as well. The committee will proactively identify and address possible deficiencies that might adversely affect the clean audit. So that is their first mandate, what they do. They ensure that internal audit findings are addressed and provide that those solutions to avoid recurrence of those. I think also that's important. They develop and enhance internal controls to address the root causes. In other words, once they determine what the root cause is, we don't wait for the internal audit to come. We develop and address those corrective measures. They also assess the effectiveness of existing controls. Now, if there's an existing control and there is doubted whether this is still effective, because you know times change, and as in when we move, you face different challenges in terms of how you account in a financial sense. So you test whether those are still effective. They also have to improve the audit outcomes by creating an environment that is conducive for sound financial management. In other words, that environment has to do with everyone that plays in that space have to understand why are we doing this, and have to be aware why do we need to create controls. Every transaction has to be followed by a document. That is the whole purpose of an audit, that we are able to account adequately when we are supposed to. But the review and monitor action plans to address all significant internal audit deficiencies on a continuous basis. I think that's in nutshell what the committee does, Chairperson. And the committee is chaired by the CFO, Chairperson. I think that's also very important to mention. There was also a question from Honorable Mlebatsin regarding, we have mentioned that we've paid back the money, and why did we pay the money? Chairperson, one would recall that we were in court for 4 years with the private security industry on the issue relating to fees. Ultimately, the Supreme Court of Appeal ruled against us and said that we have failed to consult adequately, and therefore also we had an error in law, and therefore we need to declare that the regulations that we had implemented at the time were invalid, which meant that we need to start from scratch, go and consult again, and so on. But the court did not say that we should pay the money. So obviously, there were those that adhered to those regulations. They were paying the new fees, which fees are now being declared invalid. So the question was whether do we proactively pay them back, or do we wait for them to sue us? How do we move forward with them? We had said to them, look, we're not in the interest of going to court back and forth with anyone. Obviously, if we were to pay you back this, we will then increase the fees again by almost 1,000% to cover for what you've paid. We don't want to do that. The whole issue is that we need to be ensuring that we regulate the industry. So what we're going to do is we will refund you on conditions that you give a commitment that you will pay the fees. Because the very first reason why we reviewed the fees in the first place is that you weren't paying the fees all the time. So we had that agreement. And that is the reason why even when we repaid 80 million, we were able to almost recover that 80 million in the next 2-3 months. The industry paid it back again to us. So that's the reason why we paid back that money. Honorable Mabunda also asked the question about consequence management. What happens when the employee has gone, and do we really follow up on that employee in another entity? Chairperson, the general rule that we have is that we do not interfere with the affairs of other entities, more so if we don't even know where that employee is. But the assumption that we have is that when an employee goes and apply for job at the next entity, the next entity will ask that employee to disclose whether there's been any previous disciplinary issues in the previous employment, and the assumption is that that employee would be honest and disclose. At times you find that people don't disclose. At times you find that the current employer or the prospective employer would then come to us and say, can you verify whether this employee is? That is when we get then involved and say, yes, we can verify indeed that we have taken action. This was the nature of the action at times when we are asked to do so. But generally, we do not follow up, and we assume that people are honest when they do so. Of course, it becomes very difficult to continue to implement corrective measures when the person is gone, and it all depends on the nature of the facts and the nature of the case. In a case where we suffered financial losses, even when the employee is gone, we then take action. There is currently an action that we're taking about the previous CFO, because we've incurred some money there. So we are taking action against that, even when he's left. So that is a different case altogether. At times, we avoid to get involved in what we call fruitless and wasteful expenditure, taking action on something that would not render any outcome at all. So that's how we handle it, Chairperson. And I think there was also a question from the Honorable Mbele about the alternative sources of income. What is it? Why are we aiming to get rid of the fees? Honorable Mbele, I think one of the burdens that this industry has is paying the fees. One needs to balance between regulation and as well as collecting monies from the industry, to avoid what we call a regulatory capture, because when there is regulatory capture, it means that you're basically over-regulating. The industry can't even breathe in at any way. So we think that it would be in the best interest of the industry where we either reduce the burden of paying those fees by having a sustainable model of collecting revenue to fund the operations of the regulator. And one of the other things that we've looked at when we did the benchmarking is various methods of collecting those fees, which would make it easier for the regulator. One of them is to ensure that, and just to give an example, when a service provider invoices the client, the fee would be there, and then we use the client as the representative collector of those fees to us. Right? That's one method of doing it, which would then say we don't have issues with the service providers that are not paying. The second issue that we're looking at is establishing a guarantee fund in the industry, which we think will be adequately capacitated financial-wise to ensure that the industry is well-funded based on operations as well as taking care of the liability. And we can talk about it in much more detail at a later stage. I think if you go back to the speech of the minister, the budget speech, he has mentioned why that fund needs to be established, what are the objectives and so on, but it's something that we're looking to in the nearer future, which we think will bring sustainability in terms of the funding of the entity going forward. I will ask my colleague to deal with some of the other questions that the Honorable Mula has asked, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. The first one, it's how do we audit ourselves? I'll make an example of tender management, compliance to Section 32. If an auditor, if AG or internal audit raise a finding in relating to a specific tender, or even in the previous years, we'll go back to the whole population and check whether the Section 32 compliance checklist is adhered to. And then we'll make sure all the necessary documents are there. If they're not there, we'll put a compensating measure to ensure that when the AG is coming, we are not, there's no finding raised against that. And it's used also for us to prepare going forward, because it's another way of making sure that, because when you look at when is the audit being finalized, it's finalized in August, and there are things that are happening from April. So you have to go back to the whole population on audit, whether are you complying, or even before year end, for an example, they will find there's no signature on an invoice. But prior to the audit, we'll go back and have a Friday and then sit and ensure that all the source documents are signed and are fully compliant. Because there's sometimes a lack of, like, it's not a material finding, but they will raise a finding that the invoice was not signed, the date was not stamped, but we'll go back and make sure that all those things are done. That's how we do it. And then the next one for the registers. How will the register improve the financial statement? I'll just single out the deviation register. If the deviation register is not monitored and all the business cases are not fully addressing the issues, like deviation are just made for just lack of planning, when the AG is monitoring it, it will convert to a bootless. And management would not have disclosed it. It will be AG disclosing on our behalf. Then it will be a material amendment or something, because we did not pick it up. If it's a fruitless, it assists us to disclose, because if you look at our fruitless, it's complete. So if it's a also a contract register, if you look at the finding of IT contract, not the commitment not fully disclosed, if you start monitoring that, you pick up those issues and you are able to disclose your commitment accurately. I think I made three examples. Okay. And then the next one for asset management, how will we comply with this? There's a framework issued by National Treasury on dealing with property, plant and equipment, which is GRAP 17. They simplified it for management. So I think it's one of the things that the CFOs of the entities are supposed to use. What we have done, we looked at it, all the requirements in that. For an example, how you depreciate the useful life, the revaluation, the impairment. So those are some of the things that are in there as a guideline. Then we took those guidelines, we unpack it and made it our checklist. And then we made resources to ensure that all those guidelines in terms of the GRAP 17 simplified by National Treasures, we use it as our framework. So the revaluation, the assessment, the depreciation, the recon of the assets, what must be done. So we unpacked it as and made it our framework, and we continuously implementing and monitoring it. And then another one is for the reconciliation. What is the use of that recon? We have numerous reconciliation that we are doing in terms of the internal control assessment of the institution. They assess, it's a first line where you pick up your exceptions. So when you perform your monthly and daily recons, you are able to detect. For an example, if it's a bank recon, if you perform it every day, you'll be able to pick up unallocated. But if you keep it for a month, you'll get 100 of them, and it will be overwhelming. And it's also used as a tool to improve your internal controls. And in terms of the best practice, all those recons are mandatory. If they're not performed, it reduces your rating in terms of your internal control maturity. Is there another one? Given?
Okay. The GRAP refresher course, we have a learning development section under human resource capital. They are responsible for arranging our training. They are busy. We have not yet appointed anybody in that to outsource. The responsibility lies with the learning and development. We identified six people from our senior manager, not the DDFA. The senior managers and the key preparers of the financial statement. I'll just highlight the issues that comes. If you look at the slide, the debtors manager will go. The finance manager, who's responsible for creditors and preparing the financial statement, will go. The assets manager will go, and then also the payroll senior manager will attend that training. So it's six people that are attending the training. Thank you.
We've covered all the responses so far, Chairperson. Perhaps I'm not sure.
For the second round,
Chairperson, looks like there's some follow up left at.
Honourable Mulabatsi, yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question on the method that is used for follow ups by the audit committee.
That was covered by the chair of the audit committee. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Follow-up? Yes, Chair, it's a follow-up. The CFO has just said that with regard to disclosure of the fruitless, my follow-up question is, what does that mean? If you disclose yourself, does it justify the fruitless? Or what does it mean to audit practice? Does it say it is no longer fruitless? Or I don't understand. What does that mean? Because it remains the same. Whether you have disclosed it yourself, whether by the AG, it remains fruitless. What does it mean? It looks like I don't want to use the word of. It looks like when you discover it by yourself, you become so excited that you say, no, this one we have done it correctly. So I just want to get it clear, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you. There's a two-way prompt that we should look at. When you disclose, it's when the AG audits you, if you don't know what is happening, it's very bad. If they detect fruitless for you, it's going to be material. But if you know what is happening, it shows that you have internal control to detect. And then we go further now and implement consequence management to ensure that it's eliminated. It's, in terms of the PFMA, it should be zero. But management should be able to detect it. So if management detects, that means they've got internal control to detect, which is fine. But if you detect it, are you happy in it going up? No, we are not happy. We are, consequence management is not disciplinary only. It's us also, we discipline and improve our internal control. For an example, the example that was made by the director, he indicated that SARS payments are the ones that normally appear in our fruitless. We used to pay on the 7th. The clearing will be on the 8th. When they look at it, they will say, no, it was cleared on the 8th. So what we have done as another one, internal control plus consequence management, we pay on the 3rd so that it clears on time, so that at the ultimate end, we don't have, like what we don't have now as irregular. This year, we didn't report anything. We're striving to, because One thing that they say, you must know where you are so that you are able to come up with the correct solution. So we know where we are, we analyze our internal control deficiencies, and we're coming with an action plan that will address the root causes. And so far, I think we're getting somewhere.
And the question. Yes, whether it's identified by the auditors or internally is bad. So whoever caused it still needs to be investigated, whatever still needs to be done. However, the difference here, if you did not disclose, it's almost like as an entity you were hiding, you were trying to hide. So that other thing, that other highlight by the AAG is almost, call it dealing with the fact that you're trying, it's penalizing an entity for trying to hide it. That's all what it's doing, because if you didn't disclose, who says that the people responsible for it are going to be disciplined? Because it's not disclosed, it's hidden. So it ought to be there. If it's disclosed, it's clear that there's going to be follow-up, because everyone knows it. I think that's what the difference is trying to do. It's penalizing for hiding. So yeah, I was just adding on.
Right, let's go to the second round. I just want to know from the chairperson of the board whether there was an interaction between the board and the AG on the outcomes of this report and when that was done. Then, secondly, on page 113 of your annual report, as part of the AG's report, and I think you've mentioned also, it indicates that management did not prepare regular, accurate, and complete financial and performance reports that are supported and evidenced by reliable information. I just want to know, in some instances, it's a line function. What measures are the EXCO undertaking to ensure that those supporting evidence is there in those cases? I just want to get a sense of that. Right. Honorable Mulabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, when you spoke of compliance, non-compliance, are you saying you will not have any more issues on non-compliance? My next one is, why are tenders not published in the government tender bulletin or CIRA website as required by Treasury? My last one, tell us about the Audit Risk Committee assessment on the quality of internal audit charter and audit plan. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Got two questions. In what manner does the Audit and Risk Committee monitor the implementation of the recommendations made by the internal audit component and AGSA? My second question, would you please elaborate on the nature of the risk management strategy of CIRA? I'm asking the Audit and Risk Committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just one question from me, and it's a follow-up from one of the ones I posed in the previous round, and it links to the question that the chairperson asked about line management functions, because if you look at what, to my mind, are the most serious non-compliance findings by the AG, it is around the functioning around the line management function. So the basics that you would hope happen optimally on a regular, daily, weekly basis. Things like, it says, internal controls not fully effectively implemented, inadequate oversights regarding financial and performance information. And that sort of thing. Let me just check if there was another example here. Yeah, so it's about the line management function. And the SAPS gave us a very useful picture yesterday from around the assurance work about the first line, second line of defense up until external audits. And the first line is about the line management function. So nipping issues in the bud when a report lands before a manager and they spot, oh, something's wrong there. And also when staff members are doing the admin work or the paperwork, is doing it compliant from the get go, so that the issues don't crop up. And so I think that's a second aspect of the question I asked earlier, is if the outsourced internal audit is not envisaged to phase itself out, because I understand for now there's no strategic decision as to whether or not you will phase them out and build internal audits or build internally, that's fine. But is there not still scope and a possibility to use them in capacitating the key links in the line management chains, and so that they aren't just coming in to do the tick box compliance checking, but they're actually doing a more substantive investment of their knowledge and expertise in the line management functions, and helping you on that level.
Chair, are we going to start with you? Yes.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. On the issue of the question you asked, Chair, yes, the AG sent me a copy of the condensed report on the 8th of October. I read the report, circulated it amongst the council members on the 10th of October. Then we discussed it at our council meeting on the 27th, together with the initial the draft action plan by management, and decided that it will be a standing item on all council meetings henceforth.
The material question from my side, there wasn't the interaction between yourself and the unit manager from the AG's office?
Not this year, there was no direct interaction.
Thank you. On the issue that was raised, that management did not prepare accurate and complete financial information, this relates to... remember when we started, we spoke about the finding of where there's not enough information. But what we have done in terms of our key controls, we have document management system that we have introduced, and then also the OPCAS role to ensure that everything that we say we have implemented, there's a portfolio of evidence, and we also check it whether it's actually working. And then also on the quarterly report, every KPI achievement that we put there, if you say you have done 10 stakeholder consultation, we'll want registers, and somebody will go through it every quarter. We don't wait, and that function lies under DDFA, under budget and budget section. So I am responsible for collating the information and ensuring that it tallies with what it's being reported.
I just wanted to know, because we just need the assurance, it also is the same for performance information.
Yes.
You're happy now that there is for performance information the necessary?
Yes, we audit both. We complete the whole quarterly performance report. And then the next one is why tenders not publish on Syria and what? What we realize is that we did not comply with Section 32. That's why we're flagging it as an important document to be adhered to. So there is a checklist, and it's a deficiency that was noted. That's why we implemented the checklist and we implemented the pagination. And then when the tenders, before they are approved, we'll want to see the procurement processes to ensure that it's published in time within the 30 days. And it's things that happened in the past, but we can't shy away from them, but it,
The Section 32 checklist, we are confident that it will address the deficiency noted.
Thank you, Chair. There were a couple of questions around the monitoring and so forth. But let me just go back. We, as the audit committee, we met with the AG. We meet with them with and without the management, and we report that to the board. So the board may not have met the auditors, but as a subcommittee of the board, we met with the auditors and reported accordingly. Okay, just on that one. There was questions on monitoring of the internal audit findings and the AG findings. As indicated earlier about the AG findings, with the internal audit findings, we do exactly the same thing. Management draft the action plans in terms of what they're going to do and what they're going to do. They present the strategy, stroke the action plans to the audit committee. We review, and if we're satisfied, we allow them to continue accordingly. Then every quarter, they present the progress against those action plans and telling us all challenges and so forth. On completions, that's both AG and the internal auditors, we then request the internal auditors to audit the implementations to confirm whether what the management are saying is done is done. So that's how we do. That's how we monitor on those. The assessment of the internal auditors, as an audit committee, we assess them once a year in terms with regard to the quality, the work, and so forth. We do an assessment once a year on that one. With regard to the issue around the outsourcing and skills transfer, that's a good question. Just to elaborate further, it's a good question. However, there are two challenges. Obviously, for them to transfer the skill, there ought to be resources available to take that skill. Now, where you don't have an internal resource, it's difficult because no one to transfer it to. You transfer it to somebody else who's not doing the job. So that's challenge number one. Challenge number two, obviously, in contracting with them, ought to that to be part of the deal, because otherwise it becomes a deviation from the contract and then it becomes a problem with irregular expenditure. So I would say yes, it was probably an oversight on our side to not to set it up there, because what would have needed, we needed both. We would have needed to say on the contract, yes, part of it you transfer skills, and then on the other side would have been to source the resource, whether one or two, that's going to be there, work with them in order to take over the responsibility of the skills transfer. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. It's just a very quick a two-finger response to the chairperson's response. I'm not proposing so much, internal audit capacity within line management functions. I'm saying maybe rather transferring the understanding, so that in performing their functions, they do so in a way that preempts problems that would then be picked up by internal audit function. The metaphor that I would use, and I think my fellow committee members know how much I enjoy my metaphors. For me, it's about saying that a capacitated line management function. So if the problem is cholesterol, right? A capacitated line management function is eating healthy. A strong internal audit function is taking cholesterol medication, and the AG is really the heart surgeon who comes to actually say, "Hey, when your veins are in trouble, we've got to operate." So ideally, you want things to happen mostly at the healthy eating stage in the performance of the line at management functions, so that by the time internal audit does their job, they don't have much to pick up on. So it's about transferring the understanding and the knowledge so that you prevent the problems.
I misread the question. We talk about is what you call the combined assurance. Now, in terms of that, that's in place because we have a risk management unit. We've got the situation. So in terms of managing the parties, that is in place in terms of what happens, like in sense of, okay, because what we do as part of, let's look at it, as part of the whole situation, where's the starting point? Starting point is with the risk management. So, okay, what are the top risks? Then the second point is to say, in this chain, who does what? There are things that we place reliance solely on the management. Now, the management, you need to make sure that. There are things that we then say, management is the first line of defense. We then say, risk management, we then say internal audit. Now, in that process, and the AG, in that process, that learning comes through that, because we then say, okay, as risk management, we look at the chain of assurance providers, as we call it. What do we know about it? Okay, what has been giving us problems? It's revenue. Now, revenue is giving us management, please sort it out in this way. So that is there in as part of the combined assurance. But I don't know whether my colleagues would like to add on that.
Not a lot. I think you've covered it quite nicely, Chair. Just that I think we need to be very careful about that separation of powers between second line and third line, remembering that there's the independence aspect to internal audit or external audit. And so you'd expect risk management to advise management more, as opposed to internal audit advising management and coming back and auditing themselves on their own advice. So you need to be very careful about that.
Jefferson, I think we've covered the rest of the second round of questions.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, we are attending to the matter, because last year we had a cohort of policies that we reviewed. They go obviously through the management line and through the executive team. And at the last meeting of board, the executive director did indicate that there is a process that has begun, so we will be getting the list of policies to be revised once they've gone through the internal process with staff and the union in some instances.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? I think. Right. Thank you very much to the chairperson and the director and the members of CIRA for appearing before the Portfolio Committee on Police. I think indeed there is progress. I think we welcome the commitment to the clean audit approach. So the chairperson of the audit committee and the members here, they've got a very important role to play, and we will support also your efforts. It's in the interest of the organization. So if there's anything you want to raise with us at any time, you are welcome to do that. Then chairperson of the board, I think also it's an important item on your agenda from the board side. You must drive the process. We must achieve a clean audit going forward. Also, I think it's important that you meet on an annual basis with the AG. I've heard your defense counsel, indicating he's met with the AG and so on, but I think from a good governance point of view, very important on an annual basis, the chairperson of the board or the board, they must interact with the AG, because you must also get an external view of what's happening with the organization. Otherwise, if you don't have that, you will run into trouble later. So I think it's quite important that you attend to it. I think we also welcome the very comprehensive plan, implementation plan. I think also the contribution of the CFO was very good. So I think it's a good appointment. But of course, the proof lies in the pudding. We will have to see. You've got about 6 months left of this financial year. And I think from the portfolio committee side, I think if you can address these issues, we can have a better outcome going forward. So thank you very much for this engagement, and good luck. I don't think we're going to see you this year further, so I want to wish you well for the rest of the year. We'll then see in January with regard to other performance areas. Thank you very much. Members, the meeting is closed. We will then reconvene next Wednesday at 9 to deal with the DNA board and a whole host of minutes and reports. Thank you. Is there tea and coffee available? You're welcome.